हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे
We'll read the Nectar Devotion, further consideration of devotional principles. In this chapter, you can hear some amplification or elucidation about various activities of devotional service. I thought it would be nice to discuss reciting notable prayers. Generally, we think of praying as maybe a Christian activity. We are really into chanting and hearing, supposedly. But praying is one of the nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam. Vandanam is prayer. Satyam, Atmanivedanam. Each of the nine processes of devotional service, as you know, has some particular exemplar, some extraordinary person who demonstrates the potency of that process. Just like for chanting, kirtan, it is Prichit Maharaj asking questions, Shukadeva Goswami. Excuse me, reverse. Hearing Prichit Maharaj. For chanting, kirtan is Shukadeva Goswami, or reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Remembering, of course, is Prahlad Maharaj, who remembered the Lord in all circumstances. Sri Vishnu Shravane Pariksit Abhavad Vyasaki Kirtane. These nine experts in the nine processes, they're described in the Shastra. Now, those of us who've had a little background in the Christian tradition have been raised to think that prayer means, well, you've got something on your mind, something troubling you, and whatever God is, you direct that prayer to Him. Anybody, to get whatever they want from time to time, may find a prayer. We are recommended to recite the prayers of the greatest devotees of the Lord, because Krishna appreciates their prayers, and we can please Krishna by reciting the prayers of those who he appreciates. This may seem to be less creative than, let's say, Christian prayer, where you just, oh Lord, give me this, or save me from that. And so I think sometimes devotees, they overlook this principle of finding prayers in the Shastra and learning them and offering them to the Supreme Lord. How many of you did that as young devotees? Raise your hands. One. So everybody else never did it at all, I think. This is recommended, that you learn some prayers from the Shastra and you offer them to the Lord. In this way, you're taking shelter of the devotee as well as taking shelter of the Lord. This is most pleasing to the Lord. We'll read from this section. According to great learned scholars, the whole Bhagavad Gita contains many authorized prayers, especially in the 11th chapter, where Arjuna prays to the universal form of the Lord. I read that as a new bhakta, so I immediately learned some prayers in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You all never did that? Similarly, in the Gautamiya Tantra, all the verses are called prayers. Again, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are hundreds of prayers to the Lord. So a devotee should select some of these prayers for his recitation. the prayers by Queen Kunti, prayers by Prahlad Maharaj. In every canto, practically, there's some section of prayers. The prayers of the great devotees are very artistic, very beautiful, beautifully composed, very poetic, and full of pure spiritual potency. It is not like you are suppressing or ignoring your own individuality by reciting these prayers. In fact, these prayers will bring out your spiritual individuality. In Skanda Purana, the glories of these prayers are stated as follows. Devotees whose tongues are decorated always with prayers to Lord Krishna are always given respect, even by the great saintly persons and sages. And such devotees are actually worshipable by the demigods. Those who are less intelligent want to worship different demigods for some material gain rather than worship Krishna. But here it is stated that a devotee who is always engaged in offering prayers to the Lord is worshipable even by the demigods themselves. The pure devotees have nothing to ask from any demigod. Rather, the demigods are anxious to offer prayers to the pure devotees. You can read that in Krishna book, where Lord Brahma, after his bewilderment incident, he prays to Krishna that, let me take birth any kind of way, just as long as I'm around your devotees. For example, let me take birth in the forest of Vrindavan so the gopis will walk over me. I'll get the dust of their feet on my head. Or if I can't do that, let me take birth just outside Vrindavan so when the residents of Vrindavan go out, they'll walk on me. And he said that we demigods, we are proud because we control everybody's senses. You know that every sense has a demigod controlling it. Even the minor things of the body are under the control of some demigod. Brahma said, we demigods are proud that we control everybody's senses, but we can't control the senses of these residents of Vrindavan. Their senses are totally absorbed in you. And they experience you purely through their senses. That's all their senses are meant for. Experiencing Krishna. So we don't control their senses. This is an example of how even the greatest demigods appreciate the devotees and worship the devotees. Brahma is described in that chapter of the Krishna book as being a devotee following the regulations of devotional service, whereas the residents of Vrindavan were on the platform of spontaneous love of Krishna. In the Nrisimha Purana, it is stated, any person who comes before the deity of Lord Krishna and begins to chant different prayers is immediately relieved from all the reactions of sinful activities and becomes eligible, without any doubt, to enter into Vaikuntha Loka. This is recommended here by Rupa Goswami. You come before the deity and recite different prayers. That is devotional service, vandanam. The next one, of course, we don't need much increased enthusiasm for. Partaking of prasad. There is this specific statement in the Padma Purana. A person who honors the prasad and regularly eats it, not exactly in front of the deity, along with the charanamrita, the water offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, which is mixed with the seeds of the tulsi tree, immediately can achieve the results of pious activities, which are obtained through 10,000 performances of sacrificial rituals. You want to know why you're doing what you're doing in the temple, in devotional service, the nectar of devotion is giving you amplification. It's giving you the background why you're doing what you're doing. And the extraordinary results that can be derived by just taking Charanamrita. That's the next one, drinking Charanamrita. Charanamrita is obtained in the morning while the Lord is being washed before dressing. Scented with perfumes and flowers, the water comes gliding down through his lotus feet and is collected and mixed with yogurt. In this way, this Charanamrita not only becomes very tastefully flavored, but also has tremendous spiritual value. As described in the Padma Purana, even a person who has never been able to give in charity, who has never been able to perform a great sacrifice, who has never been able to study the Vedas, who has never been able to worship the Lord, or, in other words, even one who has never done any pious activities, will become eligible to enter into the kingdom of God if he simply drinks the Charanamrita, which is kept in the temple. In the temple, it is accustomed for Charanamrita to be kept in a big pot. The devotees who come to visit and offer respects to the deity take 3 drops of Charanamrita very submissively and feel themselves happy in transcendental bliss. You should read these descriptions of the devotional principles and become enthused to perform them. Otherwise, sometimes we can think temple life is a burden. But when we remember the extraordinary benefit behind so many of the little things here, smelling the incense, tasting the Charanamrita, then we become realistic about the great jewel that's being given to us. Going back to the prayers, though, every devotee should try that. You can at least learn one prayer. I'm sure you've seen some prayers in the books that you really like. Maybe you can't learn the Sanskrit, at least you can learn the English. I remember prayers I learned first as a new bhakta. I know that young boys have attraction to young girls, and young girls have attraction to young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Krishna, that my mind will be attracted to you in the same spontaneous way. Another one was about self-interest. Let's see if I can find it. It's right in the beginning. Well, anyway, it basically says, oh, here's another one I used to pray. I guess I really was learning the ones in the first chapter of Nectar Devotion. My dear Lord, I repeatedly pray unto your lotus feet that I may simply be stronger in devotional service. This is Prahlad Maharaj from the Hari Bhakti Suddhodaya. He's praying to Lord Nrisingadev. I simply pray that my Krishna consciousness may be more strong and steady, because happiness derived out of Krishna consciousness and devotional service is so powerful that with it one can have all the other perfections of religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and even the attainment of liberation from material existence. There was one I was looking for that I learned, in which it is said, my dear Lord, those who are rendering devotional service are experts in self-interest, and they're actually serving their self-interest, and they're considered first-class experts in the matter of advancing to the highest goal of life. I learned that one as a brand new devotee, because I figured, well, I'm selfish, so I'll learn this prayer, recite it over and over again before the deities, then I'll become unselfish. If you're really selfish, that means you know what your self-interest is. Your self-interest is to perform devotional service. If you're really looking out for yourself, you'll perform devotional service. Of course, sometimes these days, people think that looking out for yourself means be careful, don't do too much service. Look out for yourself. Watch that devotional service. You know, it could really take you for a ride. Isn't it like that sometimes? devotees are going to be careful taking on too much service. Be careful about what you volunteer for. As if devotional service is some kind of monster stalking them in the shadows of a dark street, you know? The devotional service monster ready to mug you on the street, you know? Watch it, don't walk around the temple alone. Don't go to the temple after dark. You could be attacked by the devotional service monster. You could get hit up. Actually, our attitude should be the reverse. We should always feel quite honored when someone asks us to do service. Never mind their attitude. Maybe even they're trying to get out of the service and they're giving it to you, but still, they're offering you devotional service. So usually, yeah, look at the attitude. Oh, you just don't want to do it yourself. You're dumping that service on me. Or else, they have this expression I heard in Melbourne, this caution that sometimes is given to young devotees. Watch out. Don't become roster fodder. You heard that one? Don't just become a name on the GP's list whenever there's something needed to be done, you know. No, watch it. You gotta, you know, just be careful. The devotional service monster's lurking. We're supposed to be careful about the material world of Maya. Padam padam yad vipadam natej vipadam natejam. Danger at every step. That's what we should be wary about. That we may fall down. But as long as we're absorbed in devotional service, we won't fall down. In this way, we can see that our standards become reversed. If we're not careful about who we associate with. Thus, I recommend that you indeed follow the Nectar Devotion's recommendation and learn some prayers to recite for the deity's pleasure. Just think about you. Suppose someone wanted to please you. And they went through some endeavor to learn something very artistic to present for you. Wouldn't you feel kind of, you know, pleased? It's natural. That's human nature. Just think about it. Someone came to you and recited some poetry glorifying you. So let's say someone came before you, Charlene, and said, "Your name rings in my heart and resonates in my brain." But I really said it with a straight face and sincerely. You would, wow. That's just natural. It's human nature, right? If the person really does it sincerely. Similarly, if you come before the deities and recite prayers by Krishna's dear devotees, Krishna becomes pleased. It shows humility. Let me recite a prayer offered by someone who's dear to Krishna. It shows that you're trying to learn the Shastra. It's personalism. Let us offer something to Krishna that we know Krishna will like. But as I said, don't think that in this way you're not being creative or individual because you are saying Prahlad Maharaj's prayer, not yours. The prayers of the liberated souls are perfect. They perfectly account for your existential situation. Lord Chaitanya's 8 prayers are perfect. His 8 prayers in the Shikshastra, they cover different stages of sambandha, abhideya, and priyojana, understanding your relationship with the Lord, rendering service to the Lord, acting in that relationship, and attaining the fruit. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur divides the Shikshastra in that way. You have the final prayer. You can do what you like with me, Lord. I'm yours unconditionally. That's tasting the fruit, priyojana, of love of God. So please don't miss this opportunity. These kind of things mentioned in Nectar Devotion bring your devotional life to life. Observing arti and celebrations of the Lord. In the Skanda Purana, there's the following description of the result of seeing arti, worship of the deity. If someone sees the face of the Lord while arti is going on, he can be relieved of all sinful reactions coming from many, many thousands of millions of years past. He is even excused from the killing of a brahmana or similar prohibited activities. As we have already explained, there are different ceremonies to be observed, such as the birthday of Krishna, the birthday of Lord Ramachandra, the birthday of some prominent Vaishnavas, the ceremony of Julana Yatra, with the Lord sitting on a swing, and Dola Yatra, the Lord's activities in the month of March. In all the festivals, the Lord is seated on a car, and the car moves through different streets of the city so that people may take advantage of visiting the Lord. In the Bhavishya Purana, it is said, in such a ceremony, even a chandal, dog eater, simply out of curiosity, sees the Lord on the cart. He becomes counted as one of the associates of Vishnu. In the Agni Purana, it is stated, any person who in gladness sees the worship of a deity in the temple will attain the results of Kriya Yoga, which are described in the Pancharatra scripture. Kriya Yoga is a system of practice, much like practical devotional service, but is especially meant for the mystic yogis. In other words, by this gradual process, the mystic yogis are eventually elevated to the devotional service of the Lord. Any of you have any particular prayers that you're fond of, though you never learn them? So, you can learn some and offer them to Gaur Nitai. Yes. Fun for the mind. Anyone else? Yes, yes. Yes, many devotees learn the Brahma Sanhita. You can do that. English or Sanskrit? English, you learn them. You learn how to chant them also? Yastindra Gopam Savendra Osvakarma. Now do that. Only Bande will teach you. Yes. Yes, you can pray. Lord Chaitanya, he'd come before the Rath cart and pray, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Jagachitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Nama. He can come before Lord Chaitanya, pray, Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. So, anyone else? Oh, well, certainly. Yes. That's why the statement is there that if you chant your rounds in the presence of Tulsi Devi, there's such spiritual potency. Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this opportunity should not be missed. It's another reason to try and chant in the temple room if you can. As a general rule, devotees should try to do that. Because Tulsi Devi is there, whether you realize it or not. You leave Tulsi Devi out from the top of the period?
No, she's nice.
Hmm?
She's nice.
Yeah. So. These are not just, you know, kind of silly things we do just because we're Hare Krishnas. Oh, yeah, leave the plant out, you know. Not like that. Everything has a powerful reason. And when you study nectar devotion, you remember that. Chanting Hare Krishna with a vow in the presence of Tulsi Devi. Prabhupada says, this opportunity is not to be missed. So potent. Anyone else have their favorite prayers? You have any favorite prayers? So please do that. These are all things that make your life more rich. Sometimes as you become older devotees, as you get deep into your household life, you lose track of these things that you did even as a young devotee, and they added such wealth to your life. I'm sure you can remember, Ikshvaku, when you would just sit down and just learn a bhajan just for the sake of it, right? You know, why? Because I like to. I like to learn the song and offer it to Krishna. And as you get older, you kind of, you know, get caught up in so many things, especially if you have kids, you know. And I remember one devotee and I, he still reminds me of it to this day. Back in, was it 75 or 76, we were both brahmacharis. So I said to him spontaneously, why don't we just, you get a mridanga, I'll get some kartals, we'll sing the whole song book. So we just sat down and did that, you know. Those are the kind of things you do before you become an older devotee. Seen it all. Been there, done that. You remember doing anything like that? But now we know better. It's not really possible to maintain enthusiasm. You really got to be careful that you don't get exploited through devotional service. Sure, many of you remember doing things like just blissfully sweeping the floor and being happy doing that, sweeping the temple floor or something like that, before you realize that, hey, you know, somebody else should be doing this. Right? Isn't that so? Isn't that so? Is that so? Do you remember maybe coming as a guest, and with anything devotees would ask you to do, you'd be so happy. Yes, I'll mop the floor. Yes, I'll wash the pots. Thank you for asking. Anyone remember being like that? Now you come and you're on guard. What are they going to ask me? What are they going to hit me up for? One thing that we'll be discussing in the coming days, when we'll be discussing chanting a lot. And you'll be hearing it from the boys who are coming back, because I inspired them all to go to a seminar about chanting the holy name. So Sitaram Lakshman and Dale and Tig and who else? Graham, if you can. He was out in Graham's world. So, why is it that often devotees remember they were so blissful as young devotees? What happened? Offenses. That's what happened. You see, when you're a brand new devotee, it can be that because you don't know anything, you're not making offenses. In order to make offenses, you have to know. You don't know so much about the holy name. You don't know so many things. Every devotee is worshipable to you. So you have that kind of attitude, and devotional service is so exhilarating. But then as time goes on, and you know more, you're held accountable for your offenses. Many of you may remember what it's like starting Hare Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, but you didn't know anything about the offenses. Everyone remembers the first time they chanted? You know, yes. What was it like?
instead.
Yeah.
First time I had to chant the temple over
here. Mm-hmm.
Walked around chanting.
Anyone else remember their first time chanting?
We had four days ago.
But the first time, you remember?
In Melbourne,
so you were in an innocent stage. You didn't know anything, so therefore you weren't being held accountable. But once you learn, then you're held responsible for that. Then if you make offenses, the bliss goes away. Especially, you didn't know anything about devotees. So every devotee you came across was, you know, a great saint, a paramahansa. Remember when you felt like that? Wow, how long have you been here? 2 years. Wow. Wow, when can I live forward to that day when I'll be able to tell someone I've been here for 2 years? Wow, 2 years. You must be the Acharya by now. Remember what it was like? Every devotee seemed to just glow with a halo. And you were so eager to serve any devotee. Then as time goes by, you start making judgments and criticisms and offenses. Prabhu, why did you take that last piece of cheesecake? That was for me. Prabhu. Prabhupada himself would comment on how we say the word Prabhu, which means master, like it means you're talking to your servant. Prabhu. And the ladies, they have their own style there. Prabhu. So this way, because we know better at that point, but we still make offenses, we pay for them. And Krishna consciousness starts getting very routine and mechanical.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we make offenses, we don't realize it. Is that right?
Can you give me an example?
Well, just looking back now from the assassination of the birds, I can see so many times in the past where I caused offenses, thought the wrong way. And at the time, I just didn't realize it.
Like what?
Just, I remember once I was really upset because I turned much to me to cry, sorry, without asking me to put my name on the service list to serve out the back, serve the shard out the back. Right, and I wanted to be out front watching the whole show. So I got really angry at this, but it wasn't, now that I realise it's actually a really nice thing to be serving the guests. It's very special.
And so? Oh, you didn't say them, you just thought them.
Well, thought this
thing. And said some.
I said it in the last one.
Like what?
This one is just...
Hmm? More or less what? Nice way, nice way. Prabhu, you should have asked me before you dared to put my name down for devotional service. All right, so please remember about the prayers. It is a recommended process of devotional service to do, to memorize prayers and offer them to the Lord. You don't have to memorize the Sanskrit or the Bengali. If you do, that's nice, but just come before the Lord and you can just recite a prayer in English. It shows you're taking some effort to meditate on Krishna, to use your intelligence for Krishna's pleasure.
Just say reciting prayer and knowing its meaning and more potency in this life.
It depends on the potency of the person. I know. Prabhupada Swami told me that, you know, the Pujari in Mayapur, Jananivas, he said to Prabhupada that, I can't remember the Sanskrit mantras for deity worship. And Prabhupada told him, well, just say them in English. Now, you know, whether Krishna is more pleased by you saying them in Sanskrit, or, I think everything depends on your consciousness.
Vibration that's superior to.
It's nice to learn the prayers in Sanskrit or Bengali and say them, but if that becomes an impediment to somebody's offering prayers, better they offer the prayer somehow. Actually, you'll find that they're easier to remember in the Sanskrit or Bengali because it rhymes and flows so nicely. It has a meter. Yes? So please do that. It's one of those simple things like taking Shanamrita, which can increase value in your devotional life.
I want to ask something about Bhumi Prashada.
No, Prabhupada said if they know that the prasad has been offered to Krishna and take it, then it has a greater effect because they're more Krishna conscious. If they take prasad as a devotee, in the consciousness of a devotee, the prasad will bring them at least a human form of life. But if they're just taking prasad and don't know what it is, the fact that they took prasad once will simply guarantee that they'll take prasad again in a future birth. Not exactly as a human. Sometimes devotees think if they just take prasad, they'll automatically be a human the next life. I remember once my father came to the temple and, you know, I meet, you know, to visit for the first time. Immediately I handed him a banana and, you know, said, you know, just take this and regardless of what you do, you're going to be a human in the next life. And then he, you know, who knows, you know, can't lose, you know. But actually, Prabhupada clarified that if you know this has been offered to Krishna and understand what that means, then at least you'll be a human being in the next life, if nothing else, and be able to take prasad as a human being because you took it as a devotee. But if you simply, you know, luck out, some devotee offers you a plate of food at Food for Life or something, and you have no, you don't, you pay your money, you don't know what it is, at least you'll take prasad again in your next birth, no matter what species. Is that what's the last thing? Like what, for example?
Like the last verses is just means that actually you can do whatever you want to me, but I mean, imagine
you can do whatever you want with me, but don't engage me in service. When I don't want to be engaged. You can offer that prayer and with the desire to come to that platform. That's the good thing about offering the prayer is that some are other in you, against your rebellious nature, you feel a desire of the soul to, yes, actually, that's the way I should be.
That's a good
What do you want? You want the...
Well,
you want all that stuff. Huh? It all come. You can aspire to come to that platform. You shouldn't deprive yourself of reciting these prayers. By reciting them, you'll actually develop a desire to be like that. Or that's what you're afraid of. Huh? Yeah, so that's a good beginning. And gradually, what the prayer is talking about will appeal to you more and more. All right. We'll see you all tomorrow morning. Hare Krishna.
Absolute truth.
One class of transcendentalists concludes that the absolute truth is impersonal, and another class concludes that the absolute truth is a person. In Bhagavad Gita, the absolute truth is accepted as the Supreme Person. Indeed, that Supreme Person himself, Lord Krishna, instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi pratishtaham matapratanam nanya. The impersonal Brahman is my partial manifestation, and there is no truth superior to me. That same Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acted as the supreme friend and relative of the Pandavas, and sometimes even acted as their servant by carrying a letter from the Pandavas to Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Because Krishna was the well-wisher of the Pandavas, he also acted as guru by becoming the spiritual master of Arjuna. Arjuna accepted Krishna as his spiritual master, shishyasteham, sharimam tam prapanyam, and Krishna sometimes chastised him. For example, the Lord said, Ashochan andashochastam pragyavaram shabhasase. While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. The Lord also said, Kutastra kashmalamidam vishame samupaschitam. My dear Arjuna, how these impurities come upon you. Such was the intimate relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna. In the same way, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. His way of life is Krishna. This is the statement of the authority, Sri Narada Muni. Om Gyana Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalapaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Narada Muni, as you heard yesterday, is making sure that Yudhisthira Maharaj, in his profound humility, won't think that he's worthless when presented with the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. And in the purport you heard yesterday, Prabhupada presented the psychology of such a great devotee as Yudhisthira. It's natural that such a great devotee is going to think, I'm incompetent, I'm the lowest, I'm unworthy. That's a natural symptom of pure devotion. It doesn't mean that Yudhisthira Maharaj is, of course, unworthy and incompetent. And it doesn't mean that he has what psychologists would call today low self-esteem. These days, if you're not, you know, blazing in lust and having a raging false ego, then you're considered to have low self-esteem. Everyone should be on the make at every moment. Everyone should be on the go all the time. Then you're a normal person. That's what your present-day so-called culture would like you to believe. And what is this about Yudhisthira? Why should he feel incompetent and unworthy? He should know he's great. You know, the New Agers have spread around the world this stuff called affirmations. You recite every morning. Anyone ever here ever done that? Yes. I can do it. I am expert. I am intelligent. I am this, I am that. Even I forgive myself. It's all up to you. You are the everything. You just have to realize it. So you do these affirmations and build up your esteem, and then everything becomes possible. Right? It all flows from there. As soon as you realize it, you can do everything, and it's all up to the power of you, then things just happen, right? No. The fact is, whether you have high self-esteem, as the materialists see it, or low self-esteem, you'll not get one drop more material happiness or less than your karma will bring you. So you can massage your false ego this way and that way, but it's not going to change the stock of happiness and distress you'll get in your material life. You can think, I am great, or I am low, but still you're only going to get what you're supposed to get. That's the mystery of material existence. But it is true. The more proud you become, the more you'll endeavor in material life, and that will influence your future birth. This life is already laid out. So what you're doing is, in this life, is that you're receiving the reactions from your past life, and you're making your bed, so to speak, for the next life. So in that sense, yes, you're internal mentality has an effect, but you'll see it in the future, especially when you get your next body. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chajante kalevaram. According to your mental state at the time of death, you get your next body. This body is the repository of karma. You already have been saddled with something that you shouldn't have. But we feel the body is natural to have. Right? Don't you feel your body is a natural thing? Yes. I'm a little girl and I should play all the time. Right? Yes, she feels natural like that. Lost in bodily identification. But the adults aren't any different. They don't understand that the body is an unnecessary thing which has been given to them because of their mentality in a previous life. Therefore, Lord Rishabdev says in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 5, his instructions to his sons. He had 100 sons. Lord Rishabdev, Supreme Personality of Godhead. 9 sons were great preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. Heard about in the 11th canto, the Navayogendras. 81 of those sons, 80 of those sons were great ritualistic brahmanas, and 11 of them were powerful kshatriyas headed by Maharaj Bharata. So, Lord Vrishabhdev was speaking to his sons at Brahmavarta, a place said to be now in either Burma or the UP. Great brahmanas had gathered there for lecturing the citizens in Lord Vrishabhdev's kingdom about the absolute truth. And Lord Vrishabhdev was also there, and he spoke to his sons to prepare them. One of the things he said was, Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yadindriya pritaya apranoti. When the living entity considers sense gratification the goal of life, what, he becomes intelligent? He becomes wholesome and balanced? He becomes a good person? When he considers sense gratification the goal of life? No. What does Lord Rishabhdev say? Who knows? Nunam pramatta guru devikarma. Mad. Not that he becomes an integrated personality and a well-balanced person. No. He becomes mad as soon as you consider sense gratification the goal of life. Yet indriya pritya apranoti. As soon as you think the purpose of life is to use your senses to procure the sense objects, you go nuts. What is Lord Rishabhdev's advice? Nasaru manye yata atmanoyam. I don't think it's very good, I don't think it's very bright for you to act in such a way that you're going to get another material body, because you already have one due to your past activities. Why do you want to perpetuate the cycle of repeated birth and death? Nasaru manye yata atmanoyam. And what is the nature of these bodies that you keep getting, birth after birth? Asan api kleshada asadeha. They are temporary and full of misery. But you don't see that. You feel natural in your body, just like she feels natural in her body. You accept the bodily transformations as yourself. Yes, my body is doing this. Oh, my body is doing that. Sometimes, many scientists today, they think that everything about your consciousness is just the body, chemicals in your body, because they've had success altering mental states by changing the chemical balances in the brain. So they've rushed to the conclusion then that that everything about you is simply chemicals, just because they can tinker with your mental states by changing the flow of chemistry in your brain. They conclude that consciousness is simply chemicals then. Actually, all physical causes operating. But immediately they think, we've got it all figured out. It's all chemistry. Just like, let's say, you're sitting in this room and something happens to you, and we just look at the immediate cause without understanding that there's so many other things going on also that contributed to the event. Just like, let's say, she tries to climb on her father's lap and she falls off onto the floor. So we can immediately say, yes, just see. The reason why she fell on the floor was he did not pick her up quick enough. That's the whole solution to the situation. But there can be so many other reasons. Maybe she was dizzy because she has epilepsy, but we don't see that. In this way, scientists simply speculate, and they're so quick to conclude anything that leads them away from a spiritual conclusion. Just see, we give you these chemicals, these pharmaceuticals, your mental state changes, that proves it. Consciousness is just chemicals. They rush to the conclusion without hesitation. When actually, honestly, all you can say is that chemicals do play around with the mind, but that doesn't mean that consciousness is simply chemicals. Just like the air carries various fragrances, you can take some spray, some air freshener, and spray it in the room, and that will change the fragrance of the air. But does that explain the air itself? Similarly, you can play with people's mental states through chemicals, but does that mean you've explained the very existence of the mind and consciousness? No. But scientists, they think like that. Many of them, neurologists, sooner or later will all understand that consciousness is chemicals. Lord Rishabhdev advises that don't absorb your mentality in karmic activity, because it will give you another body, and that should be high on your priority list, not to get another material body. Now, who knows the art of how not to get another material body? Who sincerely accepts us as an occupation? Just like some of you are going to school, learning this, learning that. Where is the school to teach you how not to get another material body? Where's the TAFE course in that? So, There's nothing wrong with a pure devotee thinking himself to be humble and low. It doesn't mean that such a person is psychologically crippled. But for sense gratification, people want that there should be good ego, get out and get it kind of ego. I think that's very good. But actually, to think that Krishna is great and you are small is very healthy. Not that we become Buddhists and impersonalists and think we all are low. No, we all are low, but Krishna is high. But the impersonalists and Buddhists, they just cancel everything out. Either everything is nothing, or else everything is the same, which is the same thing as saying everything is nothing, because you've canceled out the Supreme Lord one way or another. Nothing is God, or everything is God, is the same. You're basically saying the same thing. You're getting rid of Krishna. Therefore, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschadesha dharani. We protest against both impersonalism and voidism. It's basically all the same thing. No Krishna. Either you say, I am nothing, or we all are the Supreme. It results in the same thing. No service to the Supreme Lord. The Vaishnava mentality is, I am small and tiny, Krishna is unlimited. Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking like that upon hearing the glories of Prahlad Maharaj. In other words, Yudhishthira was thinking, what kind of devotee I am? Just listen about Prahlad Maharaj. Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared just to save him. Oh, I could never be so fortunate. Meanwhile, what is Yudhishthira's situation? Narada Muni reminds him, the Lord, in today's verse, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher. He's so intimate with you. He's like your body and soul. Although he's worshipable, he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. Yesterday he told Yudhishthira, the Lord lives in your palace just like a human being. You may not realize that, but great saintly persons know this very well, and they constantly visit your home. So, a real devotee is always thinking of the glories of the other devotees. Not, well, I'm so great, when will everybody realize it? When will the devotees in this temple come to the real level of Krishna consciousness by understanding the great contribution that I can make? No, a devotee thinks, all the other devotees are so wonderful. When will I get to serve them? Someone who's keen to make spiritual advancement will always look for opportunities to serve devotees. Even the spiritual master thinks about the disciples. I'm their servant, and Krishna has sent me to serve them. Of course, the disciples don't think that their spiritual master is their servant. Just like Prahlad Maharaj said to Lord Nrisimhadeva, don't try to tempt me, please, with material benedictions. You are eternally the master. I am eternally the servant. We have no other relationship than this, nor will we ever have any relationship than this. The master orders, the servant follows. That's the way it is. And Prahlad Maharaj said, that's the way I always want it to be. So please don't tempt me with anything else. It's bad enough I was born in a family of demons. Now, my dear Lord, don't tempt me with material benedictions. Through these chapters in the seventh canto, you can feel the heart of Prahlad Maharaj. And now Narada Muni is allowing you to feel the heart of Yudhishthira, the humility of Yudhishthira. You might say, why didn't Yudhishthira Maharaj understand that he had the Supreme Lord living in his home so intimately? Why is Yudhishthira so absorbed in hearing of the good fortune of Prahlad Maharaj? Why doesn't Yudhishthira Maharaj also understand his extraordinary fortune, that the Lord lived at his home? That is due to Yogamaya. Yogamaya is the spiritual covering energy. Yogamaya does not act everywhere. It does not act in the material world. Yogamaya does not act in Vaikuntha. Yogamaya acts in Goloka Vrindavan and the Lord's holy dhams on earth. But not in Vaikuntha and not anywhere else other than Vrindavan, Dwarka, like that, Mathura. Yogamaya covers the devotees of Krishna so that they'll simply think, Krishna is my friend. They won't see the opulences of the Lord. Therefore, Narada Muni was pointing out to Yudhisthira, you don't see, but let me tell you what everybody else knows. That's why the great sages come to your house. They know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is there, and you have such great fortune. But Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas, they weren't thinking like that all the time, because they were participating in the Leela. They were fully absorbed. Krishna is our friend. Sometimes Yogamaya, for the pleasure of the Lord, does allow such devotees to see Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and then sometimes not. Therefore, in Vrindavan, you'll find that the devotees sometimes are offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, to Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but most of the time, they're oblivious to that fact. They don't see the opulences. They simply see their lovable friend, sweetheart, son. Prabhupada starts off the purport today saying there's always a difference of opinion about the absolute truth. That's something you're going to have to get used to. Sometimes people get frustrated. Oh, there's so many different teachers and sadhus and scriptures. What to do? And they can become angry and frustrated and just say, ah, the heck with it all. This is discussed in the Gita when Krishna says, Vitaraga Vayakrodha. Many persons in the past, Krishna encourages Arjuna, have become free from attachment, fear, and anger, and have come to Krishna. And Prabhupada describes that krodha, anger, can come when you consider that there's so many different spiritual shops in the marketplace. Who knows what to do? You get angry and say, the heck with it all. I'll just have sense gratification. You can become purified of such anger, just like you can become purified of your fear of having a spiritual identity that's eternal. And you can become purified from your bodily attachment. Similarly, you can become purified of that anger that there's so many scriptures, so many preachers, who knows where to turn. Krishna encourages. Many, many persons have become purified from these things in the past. Even the sages at Naimisaranya, how do they start off Srimad Bhagavatam? Bhurini, Bhurikarmani. There's so many scriptures with their prescribed duties. So many prescribed duties. You, Sutta Goswami, because you're a sadhu, you please select the essence so that we can understand how to satisfy the self in Atma Supersedity. So this feeling that there's so many scriptures, so many this is, so many that, teachers, sadhus, saints, that same feeling is represented in Srimad Bhagavatam. How to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The best way is to hear from Krishna himself and those devotees that Krishna certifies. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asked to see the universal form of the Lord. Why? Not for himself, but for others. He wanted to establish Krishna's position firmly as the Supreme Lord. In the Gita, the Lord is speaking, I am this, I am that. But Arjuna also wants the Lord to demonstrate So in Bhagavad Gita, you get the Lord explaining himself and also the Lord revealing himself. That is Krishna's way of saying, if anyone wants to merely talk that they are God, let them show something. Let them show their universal form. They can't even talk like Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita's perfection of presentation, the beauty of the verses, the knowledge contained in the verses. The imitation gods cannot do that. What to speak of demonstrating a universal form? For the sake of others, Arjuna asked to see that form. And what did Krishna tell him? It's not possible to see with regular eyes. I'll have to give you the vision. It was not possible for anyone to see the universal form with ordinary eyes, nor was it possible for Arjuna to see the universal form normally, because Arjuna was situated in sakya ras with the Lord, relationship of friendship. So, whether from the material point of view or the spiritual point of view, Arjuna didn't have the eyes to see the universal form. Material point of view doesn't apply to Arjuna, but that applies to others. You can't see the universal form with your ordinary material vision. And from the spiritual point of view, Arjuna could not see the universal form. Why? Because he had an intimate relationship with Krishna. He's not interested in seeing Krishna's opulences. So the Lord said, I'll have to give you these special eyes to see this form. And when he showed Arjuna the universal form, sooner or later Arjuna began to start asking forgiveness. Hey Krishna, hey Yadava, hey Saketi. Forgive me for addressing you so many times, Krishna, Yadava friend. Forgive me for all the times we used to lay together on the same bed, eat together, talk together, alone and in the company of others. Forgive me. Now I can see who you really are. So he was offering prayers. He said, obeisances I offer to you from all sides. He had to say from all sides because the universal form is so huge and colossal. Where's the front? Where's the back? So Arjuna just covered it all. Obeisances is from the front, from the back, from this side, from that side. It is just... The pure devotees just want to see Krishna in his two-handed form. They're not interested in seeing Krishna's opulences. Many of them are not even interested in seeing Narayan, just like the gopis in Vrindavan. They were looking in the forest for Krishna, and they came across Narayan, Lord Narayan, in his four-handed form. They were not impressed. They simply asked, oh, Narayan, do you know where Krishna is? Devotees act as Krishna's friends, lovers, as Krishna's parents. And they're seeing Krishna in the context of that relationship. The Lord doesn't want that disturbed. Therefore, he has his yogamaya potency to always maintain the intimacy of his pastimes. But for the sake of teaching through the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord allowed Arjuna to see his universal form. Others in the universe could also see the universal form by the grace of the Lord's revealing it to Arjuna. Because Arjuna, in that sense, is the beginning of the disciple succession. Because Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to revitalize human society. He said, Sakalenaha Mahata, the knowledge had become lost. The clear purport had been lost. Therefore, Krishna is speaking it again. But he said that I've already spoken this so many millions of years ago to Vivaswan, who passed it down to Manu, who passed it down to Ikshvaku, like that. In this way, by revealing to Arjuna the universal form, Krishna is establishing completely what the truth is. Finally, Arjuna says, can I just see your four-handed form? And then Krishna goes back to his two-handed form. showing that in all circumstances it is the two-handed form that is the most confidential. Remember, Arjuna, he, when seeing universal form, immediately began to apologize for his intimate behavior. But Krishna wanted that intimate behavior from Arjuna. So the universal form experience was just a temporary thing. Narada Muni is reminding Yudhisthira, who is the oldest Pandava brother, that actually you are the most fortunate in this world because you have the Supreme Lord in his original form living with you. So you are thinking naturally that Prahlad is more fortunate, but don't forget about yourself. Who can understand the Lord's intimacy with the Pandavas? He acted as their messenger, taking a letter to Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. He acted as their night watchman sometimes, guarding their house at night. He acted as their guru, chastising Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. This is what Narada Muni is pointing out. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very famous verse spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Itam satam brahma sukhanubhuja. Here we have this cowherd boy playing with his cowherd boyfriends. This cowherd boy, Krishna, is thought of as the impersonal Brahman by many. He's thought of as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by devotees. He's thought of as ordinary by those under the influence of Maya. But here he is, the Supreme Lord, no doubt, playing with these cowherd boys like a friend, because these cowherd boys have accumulated unlimited pious activities. That's a way of saying only by extraordinary mercy can someone attain that position of playing with Krishna as a friend, as an equal friend. Krita punya punja. Who can count the births of pious activities necessary for that position? Of course, pious activities will not take you to the spiritual world, but this is Shukadeva Goswami's way of saying, who can understand their good fortune? How many unlimited bursts of pious activities did these devotees perform? To play with Krishna in the forest, with that attitude known as Vishramba, equality. Krishna, I'm as good as you. Let's wrestle. That's the attitude of Krishna's cowherd boyfriends. More intimate than the relationship between Krishna and Arjuna and the Pandavas. Any questions? Yes? Why just Krishna and Mathura and Dwarka and Vrindavan are the same? They are the same, but Krishna reveals his deepest intimacies in Vrindavan. Sweet, sweeter and sweetest. It doesn't mean Krishna in Dwarka or Mathura is deficient. No, it just means he doesn't reveal the depths of intimacy that he does in Vrindavan. That doesn't mean we don't like to hear about Krishna in Dwarka or Mathura. Sometimes immature devotees, they say like, oh, I only want to hear about the Lord in Vrindavan. Now, a pure devotee, what to speak of, those who are not pure devotees are anxious to hear all of Krishna's activities.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, obviously he doesn't have the Vrindavan mood of intimacy in Dwarka. That's why Radharani and the gopis don't want to see him in Dwarka. In Dwarka, Krishna has his royal regal mood, and the gopis don't like that. It doesn't attract them. They say, we just want to bring you back to Vrindavan, to the banks of the Jamuna River. In Dwarka, what is there? Especially Kurukshetra. The Lord and the Yadus had gone from Dwarka to Kurukshetra for the solar eclipse. And the gopis and Nanda Maharaj and the people from Vrindavan had also gone to Kurukshetra for the purpose of the solar eclipse. So both bands of Krishna's Leela met at Kurukshetra, the Vrindavan band and the Dwarka band. But the Vrindavan band, they weren't satisfied. They just wanted to take Krishna back to Vrindavan, and that's the meaning of Ratha Yatra. Radharani and the gopis were thinking, listen to the sounds of chariots everywhere. Look at the sights, regal princes and general, military generals everywhere. This doesn't enthuse us. In Vrindavan, there's flowers everywhere and forests. The only sounds you hear are the birds, Krishna's flute. Krishna is dressed as a cowherd boy, not as an opulent prince. Come back, Krishna, to Vrindavan. We're not interested in loving you in any other mood. The goal of Gaudiya Vaishnavism is Vrindavan, whether Vrindavan manifesting as Chaitanya Leela or Krishna Leela. As for what every individual will do, I cannot say. Most of them, if they don't get it together, they're going to take birth in the next life in India or else go to the heavenly planets. Prabhupada said that we'll have ISKCON in the spiritual world, but we also better open up some branches in the heavenly planets because for example, what does the Bhagavatam second canto say about householders who do not strictly follow the regular principles? Where do they go? Yeah. Who knows? Doesn't say they're demons. Huh? Yes, they says they won't go back to Godhead, but they'll go to the heavenly planets. That is the destination for householders who do not strictly follow their vows. That's right there. Someone showed me in Mayapur. It's there, twice in Prabhupada's purport. Also, Prabhupada himself said that devotees who don't completely get it together in this life, Western devotees, they'll take their next birth in India. So we better start having some Indian Bengali message here. Even if you go to the heavenly planets, you still come back, you fall down. Chine Punye Marchalokam Vashanti, the Lord talks about in the Bhagavad Gita. Let's see if someone else has some questions. Huh? What's that? The Bhagavatam describes how the Pandavas particularly went back to Godhead in their same bodies. Obviously, you don't go back to Godhead in your same body if it's material. You can't function with a material body in the spiritual world. The exact technological descriptions. Yeah. The bodies of pure devotees are said to be spiritualized, just like you take an iron rod in fire. Even though the iron rod is not fire, it acts like fire. This is not Prabhupada's eternal form. Still, if you take the pure devotee to be an ordinary person, have an ordinary body, that's an offense.
All those who are in love with Krishna, they are all spiritual beings. Everybody is.
They're traveling with Krishna from universe to universe, most of those devotees. Some of them have come up from the ranks of conditioned souls. Anything else? All right. Hare Krishna.